All righty. Are we now to 1961, when Governor Terry Sanford started the Good Neighbor
Council? Good Neighbor Council. Well, Terry Sanford was elected governor in 1960 after a bitter fight with against a staunch segregationist, and his name escapes me. I think of it after a while, I know. But at any rate, Terry was concerned about human welfare. Now, he was really what I call a person of personal concern about human welfare, irrespective. He was sagacious enough to understand some of the dynamics of segregation and the way certain people were treated and whatnot. And he took the approach that education and the expansion of understanding through education and through personal contacts would be helpful and be in order. So with this in the background, he created the Good Neighbor Council in the early term. Maybe it might have been, he was inaugurated in January, might have been March or April, somewhere in early 61. He created the Good Neighbor Council by executive order. And to get it off the ground, he invited black citizens in whom he had contacts or confidence, or who had some history of concern for race relationships all across the state. There were roughly about maybe 25 or 30 of us who answered his invitation to the mansion on this particular morning for breakfast. And he told us that he had created the group by executive order. And by invitation, he asked many of us to serve on this Good Neighbor Council, of which it was composed of black and white citizens.
From all over the state?
All over the state. All over the state. And I was one of the people from Eastern North Carolina, as I remember one of my good friends, Devara Collins, who was a high school principal, was there. John Wheeler from Durham was there. And there were others whose names I don't remember. One of these days I'll probably get the executive director of the President Human Relations to dig back in the files to get those names for me. But at any rate, that was a statewide effort to ease the problems that we could foresee with integration, and that would be created by integration, by racial clashing and whatnot. So that gave me an opportunity to hopefully to display some leadership beyond a local basis. And so that started out, and of course, my local efforts through the Interracial Committee continued here in the city of Greenville and Pitt County. Every time that we can make some contribution toward easing a situation that might become tense along racial lines, we did it. And you will see, when you get a chance to digest this article, our thing, that was an effort that primarily was sponsored by and supported by the Interracial Committee to help solve the problems of integration, integrating the schools.
This is an article in the Greenville Daily Reflector newspaper from October 31st, Halloween of 19... I can't tell. Friday, it says October. It almost looks like... It couldn't have been 69. It must be... must be 1960.
Joint.
It was 1969.
Yeah.
All right.
But now, you remember the Joint Council came in as an organization on the vehicle. But everything we did in the Joint Council in this fashion was supported by the Interracial Committee. See? So, I think those, these endorsers should have the Pitt County. We got the sponsor, the Pitt County Interracial Committee, the Pitt County Good Neighbor Council, Good Neighbor Council, City of Greenville, because we had two at the time, the North Carolina Joint Council on Health and Citizenship, and the County Chamber of Commerce of the and Merchants Association of Greenville, the Good Neighbor Council of Aden, and
you're still working on public accommodations here, aren't you? You started in 1960-ish when you
this whole thing here is a contribution toward easing the pains and the misunderstanding of school integration.
School integration.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Our thing is on school integration.
It's on school integration. But I'm trying to let you know that this is just evidence of the activity of the Joint Council aided and abetted by the Interracial Committee.
And the Good Neighbor Council.
See, I mean, and the Pitt County... One of our sponsors, the Pitt County Interracial Committee, it took a lot of doing to get that many people to understand and agree with this concept. Now,
agree to publish their names.
Yeah. See, of course, you're looking at the author of the article, but then my job was to sell the concept contained in this article to those other sponsors and supporters.
Right.
Yeah.
I understand.
And see, that's a whole lot of legwork now, a lot of phone calls and whatnot. So so you can see that all of these little pieces fit just like a jigsaw puzzle.
Surely.
In terms of the whole concept. And then in the area of human relations, going from education on lives to human relations, where this Pitt County Interracial Committee. Then we had a good neighbor council, a local good neighbor council formed. And after Terry Sanford went out of office, see, at that time the governor could serve only one term, 4 years. And after Terry Sanford went out of office and Dan Moore was elected, there was some great concern as to whether Dan Moore would continue the Good Neighbor Council by renewing of the executive order, or whether he would just let it die. But luckily, serving on the Good Neighbor Council at that time with this fellow Dave Coltrane that I mentioned, and Dave had worked on some other project with the then Governor Moore, and he had a lot of influence on him. So what Mr. Coltrane did was to, and I was on the State Good Neighbor Council, as you know.
I have down here that you were the chair of the Eastern Division.
Eastern Division. Well, that was something that was with the work of Dave Coltrane. He divided the state into the Eastern Division and the Western Division. That was Dave Coltrane's our organizational structure. And he named me chairman of the Eastern Division. And some guy from Winston-Salem was the chair of the Western Division. And all of the agents, the field workers east of Raleigh reported to me.
That's a big job.
Yeah. And then they would go in and they would troubleshoot wherever a local county or city good neighbor council chair will call for help. We got a problem. We foresee problems. We have heard that we're going to have a demonstration of problems. Those field workers from the Good Neighbor Council in Raleigh, both of my field workers, main ones, actually lived in Rocky Mount, and the one lived in Kinston, but they would always coordinate what their problem was, where they're being called. They'd pass that information on to me. And so that went along, but after Sanford left office and Dan Moore came in, Coltrane was still the chair, and then he started some efforts to have the whole human relations business recognized by legislative mandate as one of the official legislative councils of the state. And he was able to, by his good office and good friendship with the governor, we got it through. And then all of the good neighbor councils, we became human relations councils by legislative mandate of the whole state. And that followed in order. And for us to do that, Dave Coltrane worked with me, and I'm sure he worked with other people, but he and I really, several times, he was an aviator. He flew a little Cub plane. He'd jump on a little Cub plane and fly from Raleigh to Greenville. I'd pick him up over there at the airport and bring him. We had sitting here, and we hammered out the language for the human relations councils. And the theory and the in the application was that once we got a state human relations council, that we would ask every local legislative body, city or county, to set up local human relations council. And the way it finally worked out was that the main human relations councils on a local level would be formed actually in the county seat of that county. And so that's where we are now. And I would say that in North Carolina, that the Good Neighbor Council, followed by the Human Relations Council from a state level, did a whole lot to prevent us to save us the violence of a lot of other areas suffered. And of course, you know that the counter-sit-in movements started in Greensboro at the lunch counter for A&T students, February the 1st, 1960. Then the sit-in movement spread all over the country, and especially in the South and Southeast.
Tell us, before we go on to the sit-in movements from A&T there, I was just wanted to make sure, was the Human Relations Council, the Good Neighbor Council, has that been integrated from the beginning?
Yeah. That was integrated from the beginning when it was an integrated group that Terry Sanford called to the mansion to kick off the Good Neighbor Council as we knew it. Yes, indeed.
Righty. Will you now tell us a little bit? Do you have more energy here?
Go ahead.
All right. What happened there at the lunch counter in Greensboro?
And
how did you hear about it?
Well, it was in the newspapers all over the country, and on radio and television. Ezell Blair, student up at A&T. I was back here practicing medicine. I was not then on the board of trustees at A&T, but naturally I was interested in the whole movement toward integration and good human relations, and it was big news that these four young men, immaculately dressed, went and stayed at the counters of this lunch counter in Greensboro. I believe it was Woolworths, I believe. But anyway, we were one of the 10-cent stores. They sat and just wouldn't leave. And they created all that furor, and they just stayed until they were served. And that kicked off the whole thing.
Yeah. How long did they sit there, do you remember?
I read the account, so I don't exactly remember, but it was the better part, just my memory tells me it was the better part of a day. It might have been more than one day before they were served and it finally got worked out.
Well, they didn't have their interracial committee going in Greensboro, I guess.
I tell you, demonstrations and...
It was actually the Joint Council on Health and Citizenship that had the movement here in Greenville.
Actually working in conjunction with the Pitt Interracial Committee and also the Good Neighbor Council following the Pitt Interracial Committee. I was the leadership on the Pitt Interracial Committee, and whatever I did that was good, you know, I would called in and said, "Give a joint council follow us," and said, "Now look, you're going to help us out, you're going to follow us." So it was an easy thing for me, being the leader of both groups.
Good communication. But at A&T, they didn't have an Andy Best, and so the young men took it upon themselves.
They deserve a place in history from the bravery and the determination that we're going to end this, because the fights against segregation were brewing all over the country. And of course, it was led by Dr. Martin Luther King and all of his efforts down there, and his meeting at the bridge with Bull Connor and the dogs and all that kind of, and the racial atmosphere in all the way across the country was very, very unstable, very volatile, very dangerous.
Well, so you were not yet on the Board of Trustees at A&T at that time, but soon you were.
Yes, in 1963 I was nominated by the governor to sit on the Board of Trustees at A&T.
And you did that until when?
Until 1972, actually, when I came off the board to go to join the Board of Governors.
And I understand that you sort of counseled young students who were involved in civil rights movements at that time.
Well, yeah. That was an ongoing thing.
Sure.
Yeah, that was an ongoing thing.
My notes say here something about co-ed dorms and non-compulsory class attendance.
Yeah. As a member of the board at A&T, well, things were moving, and there was a lot of student unrest, and some of the students at A&T wanted non-compulsory class attendance, patterned after the University of Chicago, and I was on the board, and I was one of the promoters of the what I call student responsibilities. Let's promote student responsibility. Leave them on their own. If a kid is able to be in college, he ought to be able to be responsible enough to do his work. And I likened it to my own experience as a student at A&T, that nobody had to tell me what time I had to get up to do my study. Nobody had to tell me what time I had to get up to make that job. I worked on the farm as a work student. The A&T had ran a farm at that time. I worked for the poultry man and the pork producer. And of course, I put in some time at the college dairy, milking cows and all this kind of thing. So anyway, I was an advocate of it. We passed it, the Board of Trustees, a non-compulsory class attendance, meaning that the student as long as he did the work, whether he went to class or not, you know, that the professor could not say, well, he didn't attend class for X number of days and flunk him on that basis. As long as he did the rest of the work, made the class when his tests were given, and all this kind of thing. And this young man, who was from New Bern, called me 2 days before the final trustee board meeting before commencement. We usually have a board meeting just before commencement. And he called me and was saying that Dr. Thorpe had flunked him and how devastating it was and whatnot. So I said, well, okay, I'll be in Greensboro the next couple of days. So when I got there and found out what had happened, he had been to class just one day, and the day that he went, the professor was putting a test on board, so he left and hadn't passed any of his exams. And so I said, well, the professor didn't flunk you. You flunked yourself. You failed yourself. And that was an episode that I had to deal directly with a student who had, and I told him, I preached him a sermon, Ruth. I said, now, you make me look bad. When I stuck my neck out to go along with was giving you all responsibility, and when you fail your responsibility and fail miserably, what does that say about me? It says that I must have either been drunk or crazy, or maybe both. And so it went on off in a jovial way, but we took care of him. He had a scholarship to go out Midwest somewhere to do some special work. And it so happened that North Carolina Central in Durham had a summer program that was designed for such cases where a student at this university or that level needed some makeup work. So we got him in on that program, and so it turned out okay. It turned out okay, which was a lot of cost of some headaches, some heartaches, and some hard work, and some telephone calls where I would call a friend of mine up in Durham and say, hey, look, I got a problem. This student's so and so, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, give me the story. Let me see what I can do to help you. And it's contact like this. And that's another thing that I try to get instilled in students' mind, that there's great value in knowing people who are in various places, but above all, having your conduct so that those people not only know you, but they respect you and that they have some feelings for you. I said, now that's key. You want a person who is in position to say yes or no. You want that person to have your interest at heart and to believe that if he gives you an opportunity that you're going to make good of. No. Otherwise than that, who would stick his neck out? Yep. Yeah.
Makes good sense. Well, you were a guardian angel for many students.
Oh, for the students, yeah.
Coming up. Well, Dr. Best, I think we've talked enough about this today.
Okay.
Shall we end our session?
All right.
A few little odds and ends we want to talk about in one more session, I think.
Okay. And we may need to embellish, as I say, public
talk
housing.
Again. As we get the transcripts.
Yeah,
produced.
Public housing. And
all right, and public housing, we'll talk about that next time too.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. It's been I think a very good session, a very nice session.
We covered a lot.
Yeah, covered a lot. Okay. All right.